present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with an advertisement seen in a shop in Torcross, Devon, and read by Charlotte Green.
Wanted, gravedigger, good opening for old man.
Thank you, Dr. C. Lynn of Dulwich, for sending us that. Now, let's meet the team. Shall we welcome first, on my right, Guardian columnist Francis Wheen, and all-round entertainer and spin doctor, Jeremy Hardy. Facing them on my left, journalist and broadcaster Joanna Coles, and old know-it-all, the king of the news quiz cop, Mr. Alan Corran. Before we start round one, here's an advertisement in Satellite TV Europe.
The Pan-European Sex on Satellite Guide is free on request. Please tell us what equipment you have below.
Thank you, James Mosley of the Wirral, for that. Now, Francis, it's your question first, and it's this. Who crossed his pals by crossing the floor? A complicated political one for you there.
You always ask the difficult questions first, don't you? I think this might be this chap, Alan Howard, the great Shakespearean actor, who lives in Stratford-on-Avon and has apparently turned himself into a Tory MP called Alan Howarth, but now he's resigned from the Conservative Party.
That's right.
Could this be right? Because he says that in the last couple of years it's become rather right-wing. He's only just noticed this. He says it's not the Conservative Party that he joined when Mrs. Thatcher was running it, that nice, moderate, one-nation party. And I suspect he might be a tiny bit eccentric. I don't know why I should think that. And also makes me suspect him is he says he hates right-wing politicians, but he's immediately gone off and chummed up with Tony Blair. Just he hasn't the faintest idea. I think he should go back to acting.
He denied he's mad, though, and he said it's just impossible for him to discharge his duties as king without the help and support of the woman he loves. His wife said she'd like to come back now that he's left the Tory party, which is quite telling, isn't it, really? People always say, how can you trust a Tory politician knowing he's deceived his wife, when you should really ask the wife, how can you trust your husband knowing he's a Tory politician?
There's no bias in this show.
I saw that bias thing. Bottomley has got a charter next year. Do you see that? There's a new broadcasting charter. And programmes that exhibit bad taste or impartiality will be off. I don't know where you're appearing next week. What are you doing there?
Jeremy, who picked a fight with those he wouldn't fight for?
This is Polly Portillo, isn't it? It has been the Conservative Party conference, and there is a popular myth about the Conservative Party, which is the idea that one or two of them are quite nice people. And in order to dispel this misconception, every year hundreds of them, drooling, gagging, xenophobic loopers, clutching slightly soiled copies of the Daily Mail, gather together and bounce up and down as one piece of malevolent idiocy after another appears on the stage. We had your man from Ireland, Mawinney, trying to rile them against Asian women till it turned out it was a charity sponsored by the... What's her name?
Princess Royal.
Princess Royal, Princess Anne. And we had Heseltine telling them a joke from 20 years ago and they laughed uproariously because they just got it. We had Polly Portillo telling us that the world is frightened of us because we're really hard because we've got the SAS, in spite of the fact that in the rest of the world, the SAS is the Swedish airline. But we're really tough because we've got the SAS, who are marvellous at unarmed combat, which means shooting people who are unarmed. But there's a book coming out saying that he was actually quite a nice boy. He was quite left-wing, came from a good family, father in the Spanish Civil War. And you wonder, a boy like that, a nice lad, what chain of appalling circumstances happens to somebody that they turn into the monster we now see today?
I see nothing to object to in that.
Rather sympathetic towards Portillo.
Get the other side of the argument.
Well, yes, he said the British Army would never go off and fight for Belgians. And he's absolutely right. We did it 80 years ago, and it didn't half upset the Germans. It upset European unity 80 years.
This was Defence Secretary Michael Portillo at the Tories' Blackpool rally. The conference was also treated to a speech from Michael Heseltine, who hopped about the stage on one leg, pulling faces and screaming about how the Labour Party can't be taken seriously. Joanna, how nice to have you back with us. What prize was taken in no time at all?
This is the Nobel Prize, which several of which seem to have been doled out this week. And the one for physics went to two American scientists, one of whom had discovered that something weighed nothing, and the other of whom discovered a particle which lives for a millionth of a billionth of a second, which, if you think about it, really isn't very long, is it? The second part, I think, is also the fact that Seamus Heaney has agreed to present a new programme for BBC One Light Entertainment, which will be on Saturday night, opposite Blind Date, called Poets Win Prizes.
It's absolutely right. It's all about Nobel Prize Week, including scientists who won the award for discovering a particle called the tau, with a lifespan of, as you so rightly say, of 1 million billionth of a second. So they must have got home nice and early that day. The Chemistry Prize went for research into holes in the ozone layer caused by millions of hairsprays and deodorants, which sound like a lot of aerosols, but apparently it's true. However, Alan, here's a piece of music for you.
Went downtown for a cup of tea and I saw two skinheads looking at me. I'll give them headbutts. Headbutts.
Unsurprising, that was called Headbutt.
Victor Sylvester doesn't get any better, does he?
No, he doesn't. And the question is, who used his head in a pitch battle?
This is Duncan Ferguson, who went to head the ball, and when he came down again, there were the opposing forward's teeth bedded in his forehead through no fault of his own. The man simply got in the way of Duncan Ferguson's ambition. He then turned up in court in an extraordinarily brown suit. I think they gave him 3 months of wearing the brown suit. But as all footballers do when they're fully dressed, he looked an absolute prat.
Except for Pratt the footballer. He looks an absolute Ferguson, of course.
Even as we speak, he's been taken down and is...
As we speak.
He's gone somewhere really nasty. He's gone to Bear Linney. They don't take prisoners, but I mean, they really do, but they don't keep them long. I mean, I think in the head-butting stakes in Berlini, he'll be about, Corinthian League 4. He comes out in one piece.
What I like was the prison officer who, when asked if Ferguson would be allowed to play for the prison team, said, well, normally we don't let professionals play with the prison team in case they get injured.
Well, if you're listening in Berlin, we're only having a wee bit of fun down here. This refers to footballer Duncan Ferguson, who was jailed for headbutting another player, but will still be able to play on the wing, E-wing, of course. And the scores at the end of round one are, as they always are on the news quiz, 4-4. Francis, your turn for another question. Who won't be credited for his final cut?
Yes. This is Michael Dobbs.
Yeah.
Not yet Sir Michael Dobbs, which might explain what follows, who was deputy chairman of the Conservative Party not so long ago and also writes all those television plays about Francis Urquhart. Mm-hmm. And he's in a frightful huff about the BBC, as we all are. The water tonight is particularly unpleasant. They're doing a thing called The Final Cut, which is the last Urquhart drama. And it includes a scene of Mrs. Thatcher's state funeral. And he's got very upset by this. He says he wants his name taken off the credits, which is very odd, because all the previous series, House of Cards and To Play the King, or whatever they were called, showed Tory politicians as murderers, adulterers, coke snorters, God knows what else. And he was quite happy with all that. But the idea that a Tory Prime Minister might actually get a state funeral has upset him so much that he wants his name excised from the credits. Is this right?
Absolutely right.
It's because it's a happy ending.
Joanna, will you have a listen to this?
If you should ever leave me, though life would still go on, believe me, the world could show nothing to me. So what good would living do me? God only knows what I'd be without you. Thank you.
Beach Boys singing God Only Knows there, and your question is, who might give up a grant and go a Roman?
It's Liz Hurley, in a really bizarre story that she gave an interview to William Cash, the journalist, son of Bill Cash, saying that she was contemplating, indeed she'd been taking instruction in deviating from the road to Milan, which is the one she knows rather well, and moving over to the Roman Catholic Church. The only strange thing about this was that she quoted Father Alexander Sherbrooke, I think his name was, saying that he was the one that had given her all this advice, but then he said that he'd never heard of her, never spoken to her, and wouldn't even recognise her. So it's another strange sort of question of the actress talking to the bishop, I think.
Never heard of her. Never. He's the Bishop of Mars, is he?
But did you see the Pope in that dress?
Oh, well.
What it was, obviously, is that she realised, she's been converted to religion because she realised after what happened.
You're not talking about the Pope, are you?
No, she's straight as a die. Liz realised after the incident with Divine and her boyfriend, she hadn't been spending enough time on her knees. And so...
Alan, what long-distance treatment is on the box?
I hope it was going to be one about the Jerusalem haddock. Are we going to have the Jerusalem haddock?
No.
Shame.
No, well, tell me about the Jerusalem haddock.
No, you don't want to know.
I do. It. I will not
it was
rest...
It's washed up in Orkney. It's the first Jerusalem haddock, and it's the size of a rover. It's an enormous fish. It's got a face like Lord Goodman. And they found it off Orkney. It was in the Telegraph. It was amazing. No, I shan't do that. This is wonderful. This is about the end of the health service. I mean, now there are no doctors at all. There's only one practice in Somerset where you can get drunk, which I rather like. That one in Minehead. But as an alternative, you can have your insides taken out on television. A doctor sits 3,000 miles away with these remote control instruments, and your entrails flash up on his mini television, and he puts his hands into these fake gloves, and then he takes bits out of you. And it's a very bizarre story. I don't know where you found it. You obviously... been reading Beano this week.
I think it's like the Golden Shot, I think.
Well, yes.
Do you remember the Golden
Bernie
Shot?
Bernie the Bolt.
Yeah, up a bit.
Bernie the Prostate.
That's right.
And you load your prostate into this television remote-controlled gun, and somewhere on Aldabra, this defrocked surgeon removes it.
That's right.
As if by magic.
Up a bit, left a bit, fire. This is telesurgery, a medical technique which allows doctors to carry out long-distance operations televisually. Doctors can now pinpoint irritating growths on the screen and then remove them. If only Tony Slattery's agent would follow suit. And the scores at the end of round two, quite interesting, because Francis and Jeremy are 8, but Alan and Joanna have leapt into the lead with 9. We start round 3 with a listing from the Hampstead and Highgate Express.
6:10, Pride and Prejudice. Mr. Bennett's estranged cousin, Mr. Collins, writes to announce his imminent visit to Longbourn, the house he will inherit on Mr. Bennett's death. Mrs. Bennett rallies the residents to stop him setting up a minicab service.
I do not believe it.
Well, thank you, Roderick and Cynthia Fland of North London, for sending us that. Francis, it's you again. Where can you spend a night in the doctor's arms?
This isn't the telly surgery, is it? This is pub surgery.
I guess so, yeah.
It's some GP's practice down in Somerset, which has come up with this great wheeze that they've applied for a drinks licence.
Right.
The idea being that you go in there and if there's nothing wrong with you, there soon will be after a few gins, and they can then operate and charge you a lot of money for the privilege. They're selling double vodkas instead of aspirins, is that right?
Yes.
And again, they say they want a drinks license because people keep asking if they can hold parties at this surgery. That was the bit I didn't quite understand. They say, people keep saying, couldn't we have our Christmas party at your surgery, all the local nurses and things? And they said, well, if we had a license, then we could do that. But what sort of person would go to the GP?
I was in hospital last year.
Were you?
I was. It's too tragic to talk about now. And the night before the operation, I thought, well, it's boring in hospital. And I thought, I'll go down the pub for a drink. And I said, is it right if I go down the pub? And he said, yeah, it's all right. And as long as you don't drink after 12 o'clock. And I went down the pub. And if you walk into a pub in South London with a hospital tag round your wrist, you have no trouble getting a table in the pub, I can tell you. It's marvellous.
Thanks for that useful tip. Anyway, the story is about the Ernham Lodge Health Centre, which has applied for a drinks licence. The application will take 10 days, 1 day to process and 9 to decipher the doctor's handwriting. A trial run at the surgery made medical history when a patient provided a sample with a head on it. All there is of that, but you've been so useful, Jeremy, on that one. Here's a piece of music for you.
Oh, your baby has gone down the plug hole. Oh, your baby has gone down the plug. The poor little thing was so skinny and thin, he should have been washed in a jug, in a jug.
That was Mother's Lament by Cream. Your question is, why does thin equal thick?
Yes, now this is medical research which by some food researchers in Reading, which shows that going on a diet makes you stupid. And I'm always a bit wary of this sort of research because it always turns out that it's been sponsored by the Chocolate Marketing Board or the British Lard Council or something. Because you'll get the capitalists shameless in this. You'll get the fag marketing board and they'll bung some scientist to say that dying of lung cancer reduces the risks of Alzheimer's disease. No, it impairs your mental functions, and it's the stress, it's the anxiety, it's not the actual lack of sustenance, it's the stress. And this is the same with vegetarians, because vegetarians are famously pale and wan and haggard. And it's not that sanctimoniousness is bad for the complexion. What it is they're worriers. And this is evident because nobody without a care in the world would go out of their way to buy corn. So stress makes you stupid and dieting makes you stressed.
It is the news that scientists have proved dieting dulls brain power. Some of those supermodels are as thin as two short planks. Kate
Duchess
Moss?
Of York lost 2 stone this week, it said in
good
my
heavens.
Papers. Terrifying. Imagine having your intelligence reduced by a factor of 2 stone if you started off as a Duchess of York. You wouldn't be able to find the front door in the morning. There'd be nothing left except to write Budgie the Helicopter 47.
Your question is this, Joanna. Who managed to find himself holed up in the wall?
I think this is the extraordinary story of Mrs. Burnett, who went to the cash point machine, and as she was trying to press that button that says, do you want a receipt, don't you want a receipt, she heard this sort of plaintive cry, and she sort of tapped the thing again, and she heard another plaintive cry, and it was the bank manager who'd got stuck in a vault behind the cash point machine. So she started talking to him, checking that no one was watching her, and eventually he fed the keys out through the slit and said, can you let me out? At which point, I thought with much foresight, she said, well, do you remember me? I came in 2 days ago to see you, and you said you were going to charge me £70 for my overdraft. At which point he said, oh, it's fine, don't worry, I'll waive the charges. So she then went round and opened the door and opened the vault and then discovered that the bank manager was not only in there, but so was one of the junior members of his staff. And given that this was the TSB, and this is the week that the TSB and Lloyds are joining forces, I think we can take it that the manager was doing a bit of merging of his own.
He's absolutely right in every particular. This was bank
He was
manager.
Called Rob.
Pardon?
He was called Rob, the bank manager. He didn't have a surname. He was just identified in the newspapers as Rob, the bank manager.
Oh, God. Alan, what was Gladstone's real bag?
This is a major book by Roy Jenkins that has come out, which deals in 800 pages with the career of Gladstone. And do you know, Barry, that nobody is interested in anything about Gladstone except that he wandered the night with a raincoat and a pair of gumboots and a pipe in his sideburns, because he was Gladstone.
That's right.
Trying to save fallen women, and don't say, save me three for Saturday night, because we're there ahead of you. Gladstone got... And then he would get home and take down his boots diary.
I'm sorry, I thought...
And
he
would
say,
met three fetching women in Park Lane, and then put a little whip sign beside it. Because having met these women in Park Lane, the great liberal would go home and beat himself black and blue with an umbrella, because he'd been so naughty. Now, we don't know whether he was just thinking naughty thoughts. Because if he met these women in Park Lane, and he then went back to 10 Downing Street, something else might have happened between these two moments that made him bash himself with his brolly. But anyway, and then he would turn up in the House of Commons the next day, black and blue, looking a bit shaken. And people would say, rough night then, William Ewart. And he would say, well, no, really, I just, a bit of flagellation, wrote up my diary, cocoa and early to bed. And they never knew that he was out wandering the streets, saving fallen women in Hugh Grant's BMW.
He wasn't a Tory either, was he? That's the weird thing.
Liberal.
No. Extremely liberal.
Extremely liberal, indeed.
William Ewart's Paris fan, as he was known in his day.
But he never, according to Roy Jenkins, he never actually...
Did anything.
Oh. Well, like Roy Jenkins, really. Like most liberals, really. Except Paddy Ashdown, of course. You can't imagine Paddy Ashdown sailing fallen women, can you? And then flagellating himself.
As every topical quiz shows, favourite person, William Ewart Gladstone. Roy Jenkins' new book describes how the Liberal Prime Minister used to spend his evenings looking for prostitutes and handing out money. Just goes to prove that Geoffrey Archer hasn't had an original thought in his life. And the scores at the end of round three are Francis and Jeremy, 12. But, the haddock lingers on, and Alan and Joanna have 13. Francis, have a listen to this. And the entry of the gladiators there, and your question is, what could be the greatest exam on earth?
This is a new A-level, I think.
Yes.
Gillian Shepherd, the Education Secretary, in the same week that she appointed a committee to make everyone speak properly, chaired by Trevor MacDonald, and including, I notice, Giles Brandreth.
You're joking.
I'm
Come
not
on,
joking.
That'd be silly.
Giles Brandreth and Sir David English, the Daily Mail, and Trevor MacDonald are the three people who are going to be improving our standards of literacy.
Crikey.
And in the very same week, Gillian Shepherd has introduced an exciting new A-level in circus studies.
That's right.
So that, because John Major hasn't, as we all know, got any A-levels, but he does have a, did have a father who was in the circus.
Right.
And so the theory now is that if John Major were around now as a little teenager, he could do an A-level in circus studies, and then he might get on in life instead of turning out the way he did. Is that right?
It is the news that it's now possible to take an A-level in circus studies. The first exam sitting was a bit of a disaster when half of the kids ran away to join the maths class. Jeremy, your question is now, which little pests get a buzz out of being pests?
This is research into the sexual politics of insects, isn't
it? Yes, it is.
It's been discovered that the gender politics of bees and dung flies are lacking, and this is being used to justify the idea that men are naturally sexual harassers and we can't help ourselves and it's in our blood and so forth. There's some evidence for that, which is, I mean, most men think they're luxing. If an elderly lesbian nun stops to ask them the time. But we're not as bad as the dung fly, which a female dung fly will be sitting down to a nice bowl of dung. And four or five males will land on her, making lewd propositions about, you know, performing gross acts in the photocopying room. And they land on her. And dung flies have actually been drowned. Female dung flies have actually been drowned in dung. I suppose if your diet is dung, when and how you die probably is of no real consequence to you. But it shows that all these greens who constantly harp on about how marvellous animals are and how dolphins have creche facilities and counselling groups and things, it's all rubbish, because animals and nature is an appalling business and we're much better than nature. So compared to dung flies, men are all right, relatively speaking. Call me old-fashioned.
Alan, where might you boldly go to your final frontier journey?
This has been going on every year for about the past 20, ever since they put that dog, Raika, or Lassie, or whatever it was, into space. American undertakers have been toying with the thought that they could burn people and fire their ashes into orbit. You become a stiff. I mean, this is one of the prerequisites. You snuff it. And then you get loving relatives to drag your mortal remains round to the Bideawee home. And they take you round the back and they throw you onto the barbecue. And after they've got you into this little urn, I'll do the thing with my glasses in a minute, and they then fire you to Mars, or Alpha Centauri, or, I mean, dead. We should be wandering space. People will have a very strange idea of what Earthmen are like, won't they? When we finally land on Betelgeuse or wherever it is, and they open this can, and they find that human beings are grey and soft and blow about in the wind and live in little brass pots. And they'll say, why have they sent this man? They will say, talk to us, take me to your leader. We won't ever say anything. Then there'll be a bit of a wind and we'll be gone.
It's the plan for Thatcher's state funeral that after she's been burnt, she should be scattered in space just to make sure.
You have got a down on the poor woman.
I've never been down on her in my life.
Oh.
Michael Portillo, yes. Well,
before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis, have you brought a cutting for us?
Surprisingly enough, I have, yes. Daily Telegraph, Journal of Record. Mr. Mullis has won the last three World Ferret Racing Championships. His prize specimen, Ultimate Warrior, took the £100 prize in 1991 and 1993. His children, Adrian, Colin and Melissa, usually take at least one of the other prizes.
Jeremy.
This is a personal item from the Fiji Times. A return thanks from a family who wished to express their gratitude and appreciation to all those who had contributed in one way or the other towards the sad loss of their wife, mother, etc.
Joanna.
Well, this is from The Sun. Traffic warden Gino Zeppirelli was so keen to see who would attend his funeral, he got undertakers to stage a rehearsal at his home in Caserta, Italy. Only Gino and the pallbearers turned up.
Thank you. Alan.
Well, I've got another traffic one, but I mean, I don't mind a week. There's a lot of traffic stuff. This is from the Congleton Times, and it says, a moped rider, Joseph Michael Mould, rode past a policeman on point duty, turned round and shouted, you ought to be fighting crime instead of holding up traffic. But he lost control when he turned, fell off into the road, and was taken to Congleton Infirmary, where he was subsequently charged with stealing the moped.
Thank you all. Let's look at the final scores. Well, they've played pretty consistently all the way through. Francis and Jeremy have got a perfect 16, but Alan and Joanna, even more perfect, 17. This week's winners. Well, before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Telegraph.
A survey of travel agents has revealed that a couple from West Bradford demanded a refund after returning from a holiday in Greece, complaining that it was full of Greeks and all they could eat was Greek food.
That's a buy.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Francis Ween, Jeremy Hardy and Joanna Coles. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Charlotte Green. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson and Robert Fraser-Steele. The producer was Aled Evans.